We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Well, folks, we've been away from the radio for the last few weeks, and we were away while all of this Ferguson stuff bubbled and exploded, but we're back now, and I'm telling you, we've got a lot to talk about tonight, and what all of this says to me, more than any other message, that it's not about racism, it's not about justice, it's not about anything, it is about driving the message, and people with agendas, as in this case, the Democrats, are driving a message here. They are furthering their agenda. They are hanging people out to dry. They are walking all over a bereaved family to drive their own message. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante. I'm here with Cindy McGee, and we are going to talk about all of this tonight. It's Ferguson, Missouri, not 30 minutes from where I am broadcasting tonight. A 30-minute drive is where all of this controversy erupted. It's an international news story. I'm actually watching it on Sky News right now as we broadcast. A couple of weeks ago, less than 2 weeks ago, a young man, a teenager, 18-year-old, Michael Brown, was shot to death, a black man, by a white police officer, and for some reason, this case has erupted a firestorm of controversy across the country and around the country, around the world. I don't understand why this particular case has been the case to carry this message, but it certainly has. Cindy McGee and I have been on top of this since it erupted. I posted a story today on Examiner.com. Our illustrious governor, Democrat Jay Nixon, has already tried and convicted the police officer in his own mind and is on record in public as saying that he needs to be vigorously prosecuted. You can read that story on Examiner.com, St. Louis Political Buzz. You'll find that story on Culture Vigilante on Facebook and Missouri Grassroots Coalition on Facebook and MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Cindy.
Yes.
Thanks for coming back on with me after we've both been out of touch for several weeks. This is a great reason to come back and hash this story out. Oh, my God. I don't even know where do we start with this story? Where do you begin? This is just the biggest circus. It's a circus. It's a political circus. It doesn't have anything to do with a young man dying in the street. It doesn't have anything to do with crime or race or nothing. The legal system is completely screwed up, or that the police are overbearing or they're not overbearing. It doesn't have anything to do with that. What's your opinion?
I agree with you. I think that a whole lot of people have taken this situation and they're trying to use it to drive their own agenda or their own message home, and they're trying to make examples of things that aren't really good examples for their message, but they're doing everything they can to capture the narrative and to get it to read the way they want it to read to support their particular agenda, whether it's people concerned about over-militarization of the police, whether it's Democrats wanting social justice. And there is a big difference between social justice and justice. Yeah. And, there are so many different aspects to this. And let's start with the governor and what an incompetent and absolutely his comments about it is time for a vigorous prosecution must now be pursued. These were the governor's words today, early today. Excuse me, this investigation has barely even begun, and you're talking about this as though this officer is already arrested and charged and indicted by a grand jury for murdering in cold blood a black teenager black man in his precinct. I mean,
right?
It's almost criminal. It is criminal that he would do that. He should be. I'm getting speechless.
There were a number of reasons. There were a number of reasons to get Jay Nixon out of office before this happened. This is just another to the long list of reasons why the man needs to be thrown out of office. He should not be allowed to finish his term in office, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and what's sad is you've got Lisa, at a time like this, the citizens of Ferguson, of our state here in Missouri, of our nation, we should be able to look to leadership, those we've elected to hold office, to uphold the rule of law, to uphold the principles of the Constitution. They should be offering us a calming voice. They should not be throwing gasoline on the fires, and that's what they're doing. It's beyond irresponsible. Their actions are bordering on, I would arguably say, criminal in the way they're handling this.
Yeah. You know, and I don't just want to dump on the Democrats here and on the communists and the fascists that are fueling this fire, because we can talk about the ISIS influence, the Black Panther influence, and all the communist things. I mean, the so-called conservatives are also just as guilty of trying to drive a message here that maybe not doesn't really have anything to do with the issue at hand. Because I listen to a lot of conservative talk radio, some of it here, you know, based here in the city of St. Louis, the St. Louis region, some of the things that I have heard over the last week and a half also have had an agenda. And I've just heard some things that are just not true. You know, I mean, for one thing, well, it's not true in my mind. Okay, so I want to speak correctly here, and I don't want to interject any more, you know, any more false statement. But you know, I have lived in the St. Louis entire life, and Ferguson, you know, I've heard the town as an area that is up and coming, being rejuvenated, being changed, and the fact that it's just being destroyed now is just appalling, because these people have worked so hard to change change everything about their community. Well, I'm here to tell you, I mean, I live here, and that's what I know about Ferguson. I wouldn't go to Ferguson. You know, I'm a white woman. I don't feel that it's really safe for me to go to Ferguson. I don't go there. You know, and a black teenage boy out of the blue, we all saw that video.
Right.
Three teenagers, the store owner by the throat, and walks out of the store with, you know, I mean, I wouldn't shop at QT in Ferguson. I wouldn't even drive there. So
right.
I think that the conservatives are trying to paint a picture of, you know, a false picture of a community that's never been in really good shape. In my lifetime, it's never, you know, in the several decades, not a good place to go.
Right. And I heard statistics today, Lisa, just to support what you're saying in that regard, that Ferguson has a much higher than average unemployment rate and social welfare, you know, people on welfare than virtually anywhere in the country, which really kind of stunned me. And so, you know, that does not, to me, speak of an up-and-coming community that is getting back on its feet and is doing well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it begs the question, you know, that maybe part of the discussion and the dialogue here should be about about what we can do to help bring jobs back for people so that they can work instead of sitting around on welfare with nothing better to do than to rob stores of cigars and face off with police officers in the street.
Well, you know, because, okay, so here I am. I'm going to be blasted for being a racist, and maybe I am a racist, but even when the economy was good, Ferguson was not a great place. You know, there were people there who, you know, you got to have people who, I'm not sure it's an economy situation or, you know, a neighborhood situation or whatever. I think it's a cultural issue. And you've got to have people who want to hold gainful employment, who want to invest in their community, who want to do those. And I have,
right.
You know, that kind of mindset has been prevalent. That being said, I think that this entire situation is an exercise in everybody learning to take in information and not follow blindly because it fits a narrative that they're comfortable with. You know, Ferguson has never really been a good area. It doesn't mean that it couldn't be a good area, but it's pretty much ripe for this kind of crime. You know, and the fact that a white officer shot a black teenage young man for stealing, I'm sure there's pretty much, you know, there's probably that kind of theft going on in that community all the time. It's just the fact, you know, it's getting shot at this point.
Right.
We take it a step farther, and we've got, you know, politicians on every level from both parties trying to spin their own narrative to gain some of the spotlight from all of the attention that has been shown into this small community. And Jay Nixon is driving that bus.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we just as a side note, and we have four grandchildren that were raised in Ferguson, and we have a grandson who was there when all of this erupted. And, you know, and he's been there in and around that area all of his life. And, you know, he said, you know, this really isn't a real good area or a good place to be at all. And so, you know, it's Ferguson has problems. It really does. And let's just be honest about that. That does not justify this young man being dead. It would not justify an appropriate police action. But we don't know what the facts are yet. None of that has been completely vetted, nor is the investigation anywhere near complete. And as it's gone along, as we all know, things have come out over the past 2 weeks since this incident started that contradict, that there's so much contradicting evidence, it's mind-boggling.
Okay, well, let's talk about that, because, I mean, this is an exercise, I think, in driving the narrative. And in the very beginning, in the very early days of this situation taking place, the Ferguson police, not militia, but riot gear style backup, and I can tell you there have been things going on here. They've had backup from every surrounding county in the St. Louis area, hundreds and hundreds of cars and SWAT vehicles and police officers, and I mean just every single day. There was one day when there was a caravan from my county, St. Charles County, headed east to Ferguson. There were hundreds of SWAT vehicles and patrol cars with their lights on headed to town. And this was right before the governor stepped in to relieve the police chief of his SWAT team like crazy over handle on the violence. And just absolute, and it was just, I mean, it was like militarized police, and we need to, that's one of aspect that we need to talk about too, the militarization and the about the militarization of the police from both sides of the issue on this. These folks have been fighting this, and then in the very beginning, just shortly after that happened, within days, the governor steps in, relieves the Ferguson police chief of his duties, and brings in a black state trooper to head up the P and who I believe is from Ferguson originally. Thinking that a black police chief is going to come in and kindly
Lisa, you're breaking up really bad. I can't even hear you anymore.
We're having some problems with blog talk. Can you hear me, Cindy?
I can hear you now.
Okay.
You're coming and going.
Am I still coming and going?
You're okay right now. You'll come in clear for a while, and then it breaks up again.
Oh, I don't know how to resolve this issue with blog talk. We have had that problem a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
you're good now.
Okay. So Ferguson police chief is relieved of his duties. They put a black state trooper in to bring a kinder, gentler resolution to the violence, and nothing but violence escalates when this guy takes over. And the governor calls in the state National Guard because things cannot seem to settle down. And things just continue to escalate. Eric Holder, the president, gets involved, makes statements, and today Eric Holder was in town to add to the confusion on the day that the grand jury is supposed to sit. And it just continues to escalate from there. But when evidence is released to suggest that the police officer was justified in his actions, all hell breaks loose. And Cindy, you and I have been talking about that for the last, half an hour right before we went on the air. There is more than enough evidence to suggest that this police officer was justified in his actions. And you've been following a story about the there's several autopsies. We've got at least three separate autopsies going on this story.
You've got the one that was originally performed by the county, by the authorities in Missouri. Then you have the autopsy that was performed, which is very, very questionable by the attorneys that the Brown family hired. They hired a Parcell and Baden to do the autopsy, and it turns out that this forensic expert from New York, Baden, who everyone thought performed the autopsy, did not actually perform the autopsy, at least not based on the evidence right now, and the timeline of the Browns family's own attorneys about when that autopsy was performed. He couldn't even have been here to do it, which means that this Parcell guy did it. And if that's true, this Parcell guy has a history of problems in the state of Missouri for doing autopsies, and he's not authorized. He's not a licensed medical doctor, he's not a licensed medical forensics expert, none of the above. He runs an autopsy or some weird business here in Missouri and gets into all of this, and I think the guy is a nut job just looking to make a name for himself. But the problem is that, you've got him and this autopsy report out there. Apparently he has suggested, or it has been suggested based on that autopsy report, that Brown may have been executed by the officer, and this guy isn't even a qualified forensic expert. He's not a medical doctor. He is not licensed to do autopsies. It's bizarre. And then you've got the federal government that is going to conduct their own autopsy.
Right.
It's just crazy. And nobody trusts anybody else. How can we, the people, trust the outcome when you've got that going on?
You know, and something that we haven't talked about that kind of occurred to me, you know, you have to question, how is somebody like the examiner that the Brown family hired, how are we going to understand that he's not doing something to the, how is he gaining access to the body? How are we to know that he's not manipulating the body in some way? You know, why would someone who's not, you know, being legally supervised be allowed to have access to the body? How do we know that that's not tampering with the situation? That's just kind of scary.
Now, ostensibly, it's my understanding that there should be others present during the autopsy in this type of situation, but I don't know that that's true. And regardless, you're right. That's a good question, Lisa. That's a very good question. How can we know that evidence isn't being tampered with and so forth? It's very concerning because there is, you know, this is blown up. The all of the narratives are out there now. All of these different entities and political interests have injected themselves into this situation in the state of Missouri. In Ferguson, they're trying to drive their agendas. They're trying to control the narrative. And none of that is about resolving things for the betterment of Ferguson, for the family of this man who was killed, for the police officer and his family. I don't think anybody really gives 2 cents for those lives that are being destroyed right now by what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with you. And while all of this is, you know, I mean, this should be a murder investigation. The professionals should be coming in and doing their jobs. This is really about, it's all been trumped up. It's about race. It's about inciting. You know, we've had Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson here in town, you know, and now Eric Holder was in today. And by the way, you know, the news clips that I saw of Eric Holder today meeting with members of the community, I'm not seeing him surrounded by any white faces. It's all about, you know, there's no bringing together the community, the black, the white. You know, this is all about trumping up the charges, you know, in the black community. But
right. Were there any pictures of him with the police chief in Ferguson or the officers?
No.
Nor
the prosecuting attorney. Yeah, nor the prosecuting attorney. He didn't meet with Bob McCullough today either. So. I'm not convinced that anybody's trying to do anything regarding getting to the bottom of finding the truth. This is all about politicians trumping up the issue and using the Brown family and using the issue to advance their own agenda. We did have some protests here, and we have a lot of media coverage. We've got news outlets from all around the world here in Florissant, Missouri, and everybody is laser focused on this race issue, you know, in addition to all of the other things that are going on across the spectrum about the investigation. And it's really about the politics of race. And we're going to take a quick break here because we have someone on the line with us who's going to come on, Martin Baker. Was at a protest this week and interviewed by The Guardian, that well-known publication, worldwide publication, who seemed to focus on his color, but as it relates to being on the wrong side of the issue. So we're going to hear what Martin has to say about this as soon as we come back. Hang on. Stay with us. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante. I'm here with Cindy McGee. We'll be right back.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
You better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children.
Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
So dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
You're listening to Culture Vigilante. This is Lisa Payne Nager from Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm here with Cindy McGee and Martin Baker, St. Louis Tea Party Martin Baker, former congressional candidate Martin Baker. Protest advocate Martin Baker has been spending some time down in Ferguson trying to make sense of what's going on in the streets down there, trying to spread the good word of peace and fairness and legitimate investigations. The reason we're talking to Martin Baker tonight is not because he was down in Ferguson protesting, but because somebody forgot to tell Martin that he's a black man and he was protesting in favor of the white officer, and some idiot at The Guardian thought that that, you know, just stood out for some reason. Martin, how are you doing tonight?
I'm black?
Did somebody forget to tell you that, Martin?
Oh, gee. I didn't know it mattered. Apparently it matters to everybody else.
Somebody's got a problem with it.
Well, apparently a few people on Twitter, from what I understand, do.
What in the heck happened down there, Martin?
Well, this is how it went. As everybody knows, on Sunday they decided to protest in front of KSDK in support of Officer Wilson. My intention, as it always has been, it is to respect the rule of law, to respect due process. This is what I am a supporter of. I'm a supporter of that. Yes, it is a very tragic situation. We have a young man that died. We have a police officer that was involved in that. Let's investigate that. Let's look beyond the race of all that, but let's also remember that we have a Constitution of the United States of America which guarantees due process of law for everybody, not just for the family of the victim, but also for the family of the officer or the officer himself, in the event it should come to the fact that he is charged with a crime. We are a nation of law and order.
Yeah, let's make a point of reminding everybody that they've released this man's name to the media, to the press, and he hasn't even been charged with anything yet.
That's the key thing. That is the key thing that we forget in this narrative, is that we're already indicting him in the court of public opinion. We're already, the jury seems to be the protester. The jury seems to be his peers who all want to see blood on the streets, who all want to see him burn for this without any evidence, without anything like that. That is not due process. That would be if the role were reversed, if he had taken Mr. Brown into custody, mm-hmm. and he just immediately just drove him straight to the prison as opposed to taking him to the police station, processing him, and taking him to court. I would still be protesting the fact that there is no due process in this event.
Right.
And we are not removing that. We're not taking that from the narrative. And the narrative has to be that equal justice under the law applies to everyone. We cannot be a respecter of persons in that. And
right.
we're forgetting that in this situation, because it's more politically expedient to try to make it about race, to try to make it where it seems that it's an easier argument. But that's not. That muddies the water. It throws the scent off of what the real issue needs to be.
Okay, so Martin, you're on the streets down there. You've attended some of these protests. You've been in Ferguson. You've been at the rallies and stuff. I have not actually been at any of the protests. Can you give me, I mean, from what the media is reporting, I mean, it's either black or it's white, pun intended.
Well,
I mean, how is that coming down?
Here actually is what it truly is. You have the legitimate people who are protesting what they feel is a legitimate beat. They want a legitimate gripe. They feel that they are protesting race relations. They are protesting the role of the police in society. They're protesting they are decrying the lack of minority representation in law enforcement in that area. And those are the legitimate, quiet people who are quietly going along about their business, protesting peacefully the way that the Constitution intended for them to do. Then you have law enforcement who's there monitoring the situation. Then you have, back on the protester side, you have elements who are not from the area who are there to agitate the situation. These are the ones that are the looters. These are the ones that are the rioters. These are the ones who came into the area like from the old plantation days, the carpetbaggers that came in to cause trouble so that they can agitate the other element which is there, which is the media, which is supposed to be there coolly and objectively reporting the news.
There you go.
Of course, naturally, they are looking for the flashpoints. If the media did not have their cameras there, the agitators for the area would not come in to try to have their own little international platform, as it's become now. Because this has now become far from a local issue, a local problem. As you alluded to, I had my interaction with a reporter from The Guardian, from the UK, who I had no idea would turn a simple situation of me saying that a T-shirt was not my size, would turn this into some frenzy on Twitter, which caused me and my family to receive such grief, dismay, and even threats.
Why are they targeting your family, Martin?
They are targeting my family. They are targeting me because of the fact that I dared to be at a rally, which they took as my tacit and absolute support for Officer Wilson. Myself being a black conservative, I'm not unfamiliar with hearing things in the black community. But this has gone to another level, because now this isn't me just years ago when I protested President Obama and his economic policies. This is now supposedly Martin supporting a white cop who killed a black kid. Heaven forbid that happened. Heaven forbid that Martin sell out his race and betray anyone like that. Because this is what the media has given the perception of, that Martin has once again has sold out is the perception.
So it's pretty accurate to say that the media is trying to gin up the situation for ratings.
Well, of course they are. They need somebody to read their newspapers. They need somebody to listen to their shows. They need somebody to view their shows. And so, naturally, what are they going to do? They're going to also light the fire on the flashpoint. And then they're going to turn their camera towards the flashpoint and act as though they had no part of when they were an agitator, or if nothing else, they were a co-conspirator in all of this. Now, I'm not saying that this is every member of the media, because there are some members of the media who are actually there to do a job, to quietly and objectively report it. But you have a very large number of them who are not there for that purpose, who are there for ratings, who are there to look for the story. And if they can't, they will find the story. It reminds me back of an old phrase that was attributed to William Randolph Hearst back during the Civil War, when it was said that he told photographers, when he told them, "You provide the pictures and I'll provide the war."
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, Martin, this is Cindy. I had a quick comment question. So I think the tragedy here in your involvement and the way it is being so erroneously stated and portrayed is that you're there for what we should all be there for and what concern or should be concerning all of us, and that's that the truth and justice be served for everyone involved, both the families of this slain young man, the family, and this officer whose lives are being turned upside down and so forth. But nobody is giving the system and this idea of the rule of law, and that we have things in place to investigate and get to the bottom of this. And you weren't there as much to support a white officer as you were to just support the need for the truth to come out and for this to be handled in a just and constitutional way. Right?
Thank you, Cindy, for pointing that out. And that is true. That is the absolute best thing that we can say. As I did in my previous congressional runs, I am a strong supporter of the Constitution of the United States of America. I believe in the rule of law. I believe in the process that it follows, good, bad, or indifferent. Am I always happy with how a court case goes? No, of course not. No one is 100% happy with it. But I am happy with the system because we have a system like that. It's not perfect because the fact that people are imperfect. We make mistakes.
Right.
But we still have that in place. The Constitution is one of the greatest gifts that God ever gave man. I believe that without any hesitation. He didn't give it just to the white people. He didn't just give it to the black people. He gave it to every person that lives, eats, breathes, sleeps under this great flag. That lived in this great nation, in the greatest nation in the world, a nation that I truly, again, believe was ordained of God in its creation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, Martin, in your experience out in these rallies and out in the street with the real people, you know, I'm kind of hearing and I'm kind of seeing some things out there that maybe some of the black community in the Ferguson area is starting to catch on to the fact that they're being kind of railroaded and used. Yeah, that they're being played. That's a great way the best way to put it, I think, is that they're being played by the left and they're being played by the Black Panthers and these race baiters, you know, the Sharptons and the Jacksons. How are you getting a sense of any of that when you're talking to these folks on the ground?
Absolutely, because here's the thing, I've said this 100 times. Soon enough, the media is going to go home. Soon enough, those agitators are going to go home to whatever place that they came from. And all you're going to be left with is the residents of Ferguson, the residents of St. Louis County, the residents of the St. Louis area, there to pick up the pieces. Monday, there's going to be a family that's going to bury their son. No parent should ever have to bury their child, no matter the circumstances.
Right.
And that within itself is a tragedy.
It is tragic.
But we have to move in. We have to move forward. We have to move it forward of what's going to happen in the days after that, in the days to come, in the weeks to come, in the years to come. And we have to have people, principles, and policies in place to truly address these issues. We have to. But what's happening now is you have agitators and media who are there to exacerbate the situation, and all for the sake of ratings. They are sacrificing the memory of this young man at the altar of a higher Nielsen or Q rating.
Yeah.
They are sacrificing
our political agenda.
It stopped being for the agitators. It stopped being about Michael Brown the day that they threw that first rock through that first window of the first place they started to loot. It stopped being about Michael Brown to Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and their ilk the day that they came here with an agenda of advancing their own divisive strategies. It stopped being about Michael Brown the day that you had people who decided that they could profit or they could benefit from this young man's death. If they had to cut into an officer, that's fine by them as well. Because what they don't understand is that now and forever, Michael Brown and Darren Wilson are forever tied together. Because the minute that Michael Brown took his last breath on his earth, on this earth, Darren Wilson's law enforcement career also drew its last breath.
Right.
Because the reality of this is that Darren Wilson, no matter win, lose, or draw, will never be able to work in law enforcement again. He will have a – he could probably, at the risk of making light of it, he might have to go work with – go be a mall cop with Paul Blart or something like that from a movie.
Right.
And that's a tragic situation. His life was just as much altered and affected because now he has to carry on that burden for the rest of his life. This is a burden that's going to be on that man's heart. Because I can probably go to wager that this is probably one of the first times that he ever had to truly draw a weapon and use lethal force. I can probably assure you that this is probably the first time he ever did, and probably would have been the first, that hopefully would have been the only time he's ever had to.
Mm-hmm.
But now, go ahead, Lisa.
What's your impression of the Holder visit today, and the games that seem to be coming out? I mean, it is a political Democratic circus, from what I've been able to gather. We've got a Democratic governor and a Democratic senator coming in early on in this situation. Press conferences, glad handing the Ferguson community who wants to see Darren Wilson hung up, by his heels. We got a Democratic prosecutor in St. Louis County who's dancing about bringing this case before a grand jury. We got a Democratic county executive who was in there also getting some great FaceTime. We've got a Democratic president. The president, for God's sake, has stepped in to make his presence known, sending the Democratic Attorney General Eric Holder in to come and visit and oversee an investigation, which is, we've got people in place. We've got a prosecutor. We've got an attorney general here. We've got governors. We've got people in the community who are I mean, it's a Democratic political circus.
And don't forget, we do also have a Democratic congressman in that area. All of them jockeying for FaceTime. We also have we have Democrat state senators and representatives all in this area, all trying to weigh in. And all at once trying to weigh in created a leadership vacuum. Because everybody was waiting for somebody else to do something. They could either rubber stamp what was being done, or they could challenge it. They could lampoon it. They could use it for their own political benefit. This has become political circus maximus, if you want to call it that. This has become the saddest political soap opera that the St. Louis area has ever seen.
This is
I hate to say it this way, but this is Trayvon Martin's situation personified. Because now it's local to us.
Mm-hmm.
And what you have now is you have everybody looking to gain something from it. It's the old Latin phrase of cui bono, who benefits. Everybody's
right.
Looking to benefit from this. And because of that, you have rumors that Jay Nixon is doing everything because he has designs on throwing his hat in the ring
higher
in 2016,
office.
Possibly for higher office. You have others who are saying that maybe this is a chance for other elected officials to try their hand at somewhere else, to try to get a little bit of a higher notoriety so they could maybe advance wherever they're at in office. If you're doing this for that reason, if you're doing it for some sort of political gain, then you forgot what the cause of justice is. You forgot what your constitutional oath is. It's to set aside politics and parties, and to think about people and principles and policies. This is what we are missing down there. You're missing people who are actually genuinely concerned about the state of affairs down there. Because if this is what has to happen to bring our leaders here, then this is a very sad state of affairs. Because obviously they weren't affected enough by the fact that every school district surrounding the area of Ferguson is at or near the bottom of proficiency range. That wasn't enough to bring them here. It wasn't enough to bring them to the area that 24% of black males over the age of 17 in the St. Louis area, 24% are unemployed. That wasn't enough to bring them here. But surely, sadly, a dead black child at the hands of a white police officer, oh, let's call in everybody but Santa Claus. Let's bring in everybody in, because now it's a problem. To some of those people in Ferguson, it was a problem long before that. And this was just a tipping point. This is just one major issue. I'm trying to discount the tragedy of it, because it is still a very tragic situation. But the greater tragedy is the drama of the people who are trying to benefit from it, whether it's the media, whether it's the politicians, whether it's protesters, whomever it is. Mm-hmm. A family needs to heal. A city needs to heal. And we need leaders that are willing to help with the healing process. But they've forgotten how to, because they have been so consumed with election, re-election, or promoting themselves for higher office that they forgot about the people. They forgot about their constituency. They forgot about the oath that they took to support, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States or the Constitution of the state of Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Well, Martin Baker, can't thank you enough for keeping that laser focus on what's right and being the lone black man in the crowd with the common sense to be able to stay focused on the issues, as The Guardian would put it.
I can't say I'm the lone one. There are many like me. I just happen to be less fearful of the backlash from it. But there are many like me. I'm not the only one who sees what's going on and who's afraid to speak on it. We have many great people that are. I'll say it. People like myself, like Stacey Washington, like Chris Hart, like our group, MoveOnUp.org. These are people who have been on the front line, who are standing there on the wall, defending the principles of what's right, defending the true values that America has, still believing that the American dream is alive and well. That's who we are, and that's what we will continue to do.
Well, you're doing a great job. Thank you, Martin Baker. We hope to talk to you again. We really appreciate you coming on tonight with us and giving a scoop from the front lines. And we're sorry The Guardian couldn't see past what was really going on down there on the other side of the issue and just targeting you for your race. I think it's deplorable and very bad journalism, to say the least. Thanks for all you're doing. We hope to talk to you again soon. Thanks, Martin.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Bill Hennessy of the St. Louis Tea Party. He's got a solution, or he's got an idea to help bring a little bit of positive healing to the city of Ferguson, and he's going to be right back with us to tell us all about that. Stay with us.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for GrassFire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. I'm here with Cindy McGee. We've been talking about the Ferguson issue all night. We just heard from Martin Baker give us a firsthand accounting of the abysmal journalism that's been kind of pervasive with helping spread this kind of racist just kind of promote some of the racist agenda that's been coming out of this entire issue here for this and this Ferguson shooting. So many things to talk about. There's so many fingers that are going off in different directions that are just bad about this whole situation. And Cindy and I will wrap some of these things up as the night goes on. But tonight we have on with us Mr. Bill Hennessy of the St. Louis Tea Party. He's got something going on tomorrow night he's here to tell you about, hopefully to kind of bring a little relief to the Ferguson area, trying to bring a positive message into a very dark place right now and to kind of enlighten the folks on how we can kind of bring a community together. Thanks for coming on with me again tonight, Bill.
Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate the opportunity to talk and let you know about what we're trying to do and why we're doing it.
Well, I don't know if you listened to the show at the top of the hour. When we were opening the show, we were kind of talking about some of the perceptions that were being laid out from the left and from the right about the Ferguson area and about the shooting. And, you know, Ferguson, you know, some of the folks on the conservative side have been trying to paint Ferguson as a community that has been on the rebound, trying to rebuild. It's been kind of a depressed community, trying to making great strides in coming out of that bad place. I'll tell you, I've lived in St. Louis all my life, and I've never really seen Ferguson as a community that's pulling itself out of that bad place. I mean, it's got some problems, and we're seeing it. You know, we're seeing some of that because of what it's being exposed to now, but you make a great point, and with what you're trying to do here, you know, in order to bring a community out of the bad place, you got to support its businesses. What have you got going here tomorrow night?
So here's the thing. You made a very good point there because I wrote a blog post about this a couple of days ago. Ferguson from 2000 to 2012, it went from 5 census tracts, and I know census tracts don't mean anything to anybody, but it's a very small area, like a neighborhood. A tiny portion of a neighborhood, but 5 census tracts with poverty rate of greater than 20% in 2000. By 2012, almost 100% of the census tracts in Ferguson had 20% poverty or higher. That's a dramatic increase in poverty during a period when, for the most part, there was a fair amount of prosperity overall. So absolutely, Ferguson has had problems. The flip side is Ferguson also has some good infrastructure, commercial infrastructure, right? Tomorrow night we're going to be meeting we're going to take off at 5, so muster before 5 o'clock at the Sam's parking lot on West Florissant. So they've got a Sam's and Walmart shopping center. Right across the street is another small shopping center. There's commerce up and down West Florissant. There, if you go 2 blocks in either direction, there's more commerce and shopping and opportunity. We can't lose that infrastructure, though. And things like this, and I know how how the corporate world thinks. They see trouble. They say, let's get out of there. In the city of St. Louis, There are huge swaths of the city of St. Louis with no grocery stores. Why? Because they abandoned those neighborhoods 20, 30 years ago, and they're very reluctant to move back in. It takes a huge communal effort to get a new grocery store opened up in the city. We don't want that to happen to Ferguson. So the first step in that is to, and I'm trying to stay out of the fighting. I want to be as positive as possible. So what's the positive thing we can do? What if we just go shop? What if we go shop in the stores that weren't affected by looters, and just show people that you can come in, you can shop, you can spend your money in this community, and start that, take that first step toward rebuilding. So that's the goal for tomorrow night, 5 o'clock in the Sam's shopping center, just off of just south of 270 on West Florissant.
Okay, so I mean, We can talk more about this, but I can't let you go without asking you. And I know you said you're trying to stay out of the war zone area, but people are literally throwing Molotov cocktails at police officers there.
Oh yeah, well that's just insane criminality. And we saw today. I've been tweeting some of the fantastic research by Dwayne Lester with the Missouri Torch. Daily Coast. Not a friendly website, actually quoted and linked to his stories on the communist agitators who, from Austin and New York, who were arrested twice, I think. I think they've been arrested more than once. Because he's the only one doing this work. Yes, there are a whole bunch of really bad people who are, they're taking advantage of a terrible situation. And no matter how you look at this, when a police officer has to pull his gun and someone dies, that's a bad situation for a whole lot of people. That's going to affect their lives. It's going to affect their lives. It's going to affect the rest of their lives in ways that they don't even know yet. And people are taking advantage of that to steal stuff, to trash places, to attempt to rile people up more than they are already riled up because of the horror of the situation. I can't think of a lower life form than people who do things like that. So no, I have no problem talking about the looters. I do try to be careful about the trying to guess what exactly happened when I don't know. That's what I try to stay away from because what's getting the blood boiling is just that people who are assuming they know what happened, who are taking bits of evidence and blowing it out of proportion. And you can't do that.
Well, okay, I totally agree with that. I mean, this whole thing is going way off track, and there's a lot of speculation flying left and right. Bringing folks in on a boycott, which proved to be successful. The St. Louis Tea Party supported a great boycott in 2009 when Gina Loudon organized the boycott for Whole Foods. It's a great idea. It brings positive attention to a situation to a very oppressive situation. I don't see how it gets more oppressive than it is in Ferguson right now. Okay, but the timing of this is pretty interesting. I mean, it's kind of scary there right now. How do you plan to organize this? Where are you going to be? Why should people come now? Why are you doing this today? Why not maybe in 3 weeks when the fervor dies down?
I think we're going to do it again in 2 or 3 weeks. Although I don't know when the fervor is going to die down, and I don't want to assume that it's going to in a week or two. In the meantime, there's businesses, and here's the real impetus of this was it's kind of for publicity. A lot of the stores I learned from someone who lives in the area. A lot of the stores that have plywood over their windows are actually open for business, but nobody knows it because they've got plywood up, they've spray painted open for business and their store hours or whatever messages on the plywood, but nobody stops to read it because they see the plywood, they see it's dark, and they go on. There's no car, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. They don't see any cars in the parking lot, there's nobody there. And there's nobody there because there's plywood on the doors, and they just move on. So the first thing we want to do is call attention to the fact that these businesses that have been damaged by the looting are open for business, and they're trying to stay open for business. They're also providing a service to the neighbors who are, frankly, after 6 o'clock, it's very difficult to get out of the area. If somebody needs something, they're in a bad place. So we want them to know that some of their stores are still there and open, and this seems to be a fantastic method to do that because I think we'll get some publicity out of it. I've been getting the calls from the local news stations tomorrow, and they want to cover it because they're not covering the fact that these stores are some of these stores are open for business.
And it's your intention. I mean, you've kind of given a window, a time frame for shopping from like 5 o'clock to 6:30 p.m. to get out of there before dark, but to go in there and spend a little money in the area to help to bring some publicity and let the store owners benefit from the shoppers. Yes.
Absolutely. That is exactly the goal. And we'll probably organize future buycotts in the same area after the things die down. Because, like I said, the worst thing that can happen to Ferguson and the whole region is for businesses to decide we can't do business here anymore.
Absolutely. Okay, Bill, give me the details. Where can folks find information on the boycott? I know, give us your blog.
TennesseesView.com. It's the top story, and I'm going to leave it up there until it's over tomorrow. That'll always be the top story. And if you don't want to go there, just be in the Sam's parking lot on West Florissant by 5 o'clock to tomorrow. Be there by 5. It's okay to be a little early. I'll be there a little bit early. But be there by 5. No signs, no political or proselytizing T-shirts. We're not there to preach any politics. We're there to help the community and be as low-key as possible, except for some publicity that these shops are open and they need your business.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Bill Hennessy. Good luck tomorrow. We hope you have success there. Please keep us posted.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Okay, have a great evening. Thanks, Bill. We're
going
to be right back. We're going to take another break. Cindy and I will be right back. To talk about some more of the events and maybe talk a little bit about some other news that's going on in the world and across the country.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. I'm with Cindy McGee. This is Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We've been beating this Ferguson thing to death tonight, and there's so many things to talk about that we probably haven't touched on yet. But one thing I do want to touch on tonight, and there seems to be an issue, a division. You know, and we've talked about it here on Culture Vigilante many times before, about the militarization of the police force. You know, there have been stories about in Missouri and across the country about the federal government sending militarized vehicles to all of the local police departments. And just a few weeks ago, in the community that I live in, there's a very small historical district right on the riverfront here. There was a big MRAP vehicle with a SWAT team plastered all over the outside of it, and they drove down historic Main Street in St. Charles on a Tuesday night, and it just freaked a bunch of people out right after this whole Ferguson thing blew up. I mean, it's just huge, and it's got a lot of people freaked out. there are some different schools of thought about this issue. You know, nobody's really comfortable with police brutality, the show of too much force by your police. But when you have a situation that has brewed in Ferguson, you know, in my lifetime, I haven't seen anything like this since the 60s when, you know, you had riots on campuses and Molotov cocktails being thrown and, you know, police are shooting rubber bullets and tear gas canisters are flying. You kind of sympathize with the people that are trying to create peace in the area. You know, I don't want them getting shot. I don't want them getting blown up by Molotov cocktails. I don't want any of that. You know, do they need militarized vehicles to be able to stay safe? Well, maybe they do. I don't know. And, you know, there are some folks, and it's mostly the libertarian crowd, who have got a problem with all of this militarized force because if you, and maybe rightly so, because if you accept it under these circumstances, when they come after the rest of us, you know, it's going to become normalized. The idea of having a militarized police force is going to become normalized. And I don't know that I actually disagree with that philosophy. However, you got to find some reasonableness, and I don't know exactly where that is. I don't think that attacking the police force at this particular juncture is maybe the right way to do it. You know, you have to have a government that has limits, and we don't have that anymore. You know, that ship has sailed. Those days are gone. You know, and we do have police in this country. And in counties across the country that have gone, I mean, some of them are bad. They're just bad.
Right.
You know, they're not upholding the Constitution. You know, they don't care about the Constitution, and they would just as soon roll right over you as follow the statutes in the Constitution of the United States in their state. And then you have others that do care about that. That do care about the Constitution.
Right.
So Cindy, what do you think? What do you think about this issue? What is the answer? I mean, I don't know that I believe in totally abandoning it, but I don't know that going after the police is the issue.
You know, the thing about it is, Lisa, and you and I have talked about the problems that we have seen with the militarization of our police, with this idea that we're creating, you know, that, and I know this to be true, that our police are being trained in a different way now than they used to be, in that they're trained, it's us against them. Them being us, we the citizens, us being them, the police officers, okay? And I agree with you, and I think most people, reasonable people, would agree that there are a lot of good men and women serving in police forces all across this country. And I'm going to assume for now that there are some, at least some good men and women in Ferguson serving on the police force. And the thing about it, the thing that we have to keep in mind is that we need to look for balance in everything. And I've heard people, you know, our grandson came to stay with us. He was down in Ferguson when all of this erupted. And he said, well, the police shouldn't have shown up with the guns and the riot gear and everything. And I said, James, what did you want them to do? You have people that were throwing Molotov cocktails. They were setting fire to buildings. They were, you know, there were lots of peaceful protesters there, yes. But the agitators were going to do what the agitators were going to do. The police knew that. This isn't their first, you know, when it comes to our police forces, this isn't their first trip around this block. And they do have a duty and an obligation. If I was a business owner in Ferguson, I would be upset if they didn't show up prepared to defend my business against people who choose to take this as an opportunity to break the law, to put lives at risk by their actions.
Mm-hmm.
And I want the police to do what they need to do to stop those who are acting in an unlawful, violent way and destroying private property and so forth and so on.
Yeah,
now,
which is the case now, because since the State Patrol took over, they're retreating from the rioters, and they're not wearing their riot gear, and they're right. they're trying a softer general approach, and it's not working.
No, and the thing is that the problem isn't I don't think the problem is the people in Ferguson. They are upset. They do feel that they have issues. They feel that there's an issue here that could be racist and whatever, but they're not violent people. They're not looking to do violence to try and get this dialogue going. But you have people who have moved in and are taking advantage of this situation who are trained agitators. They are trained to do this kind of thing and to cause as much harm as they possibly can and get away with it. And so I have not seen actions on the part of police as a whole in Ferguson that indicate to me that they're being militarized. They're doing their best, and I think they have from the beginning, to prevent unnecessary violence from happening and innocent people from being hurt by it. And whether it's physically hurt or whether it's a business being destroyed because it's burned to the ground, whatever the case may be, the police do have a responsibility to do that. And this is not the time or the place or the circumstance under which we have a very volatile, dangerous situation in Ferguson right now. This isn't the time to talk about the problems that we have with our police forces being militarized. I don't think this has anything to do with the militarized police force and what the police are doing there. They're working ungodly hours. They're right. away from their families. They want to go home to their wives and children and husbands and so forth every night. And they've got people in the streets marching and threatening them. And, yes, they're trying to handle that. Yes, they're trying to keep their heads and to do the right thing. I do know that there was a police officer who did the wrong thing last night, and I read a story today about that, and he's already been fired. There is a no tolerance. I think that the police forces are really doing their level best to not have this be about us against them, but they're in there as part of the community trying to do the right thing. And I'm sorry for being so long-winded, but this has become a sore point for me because I think that some of us who have reason to be concerned about a militarized police force are shooting ourselves in the foot or maybe the head to make that such a big issue right now. And to accuse these police officers in Ferguson who are in this very dangerous, very volatile situation with so many lives and businesses to protect and defend that we're going to now, what do you want them to do? Stand down, go away? You think that the store owners just need to pick up their guns and defend their own businesses and the police just need to stay home? You want complete anarchy in the streets because that's what you'd have.
Yeah. I mean,
is that the answer?
I don't think it is. Yeah, if anything comes out of this, I hope that there's a revamping of the thought process within the police forces across this country and within the mindset, because I heard earlier today that there was a study that was done. There's an age demographic, and there's a difference in the way that people look at the police according to their age demographic. The younger demographic in this country just naturally looks at the police forces, regardless, as overbearing, as the bad guy, and the older demographic, takes another stance. They don't necessarily see them as the aggressor, as the abusers of authority that the younger generation does. And I mean, I believe that it's legitimate. That people are looking at law enforcement as abusers of authority. There's been abuse of authority there.
There has been, unquestionably.
And I don't want to negate that.
No.
However, we have a police force for a reason. And now I'm very disappointed with the actions of the present law enforcement there in Ferguson right now, going in there trying to touchy-feely, make everybody feel good, and basically, as far as I'm concerned, putting present law enforcement in danger by not allowing them to wear their riot gear, by not allowing them to advance and to take action when they're threatened. These people are running away from looters. You know, now there are reports that they're making a lot of arrests, but basically, when you have people that are basically acting like animals, mm-hmm. you know, they need to have the hammer come down on them.
Right.
You know, and you know, it's human nature. If there is no action for your, if there's no consequence for your action, people are going to continue the bad behavior.
Correct.
So, you know, at this point. You know, if I was a business owner in Ferguson, I would pack up. I'd be gone. It'd be all over because I'm not going to stay somewhere where I don't feel safe.
Right. And companies like Walmart, Schnucks, they may decide to move their big stores away from there because it's not worth the, you know, this may send the wrong message to them. And, you know, Lisa, the thing is that we can be part of the problem or we can be part of the solution. And if we want to just arbitrarily take the position that the Ferguson Police Department and others in law enforcement who are there trying to help them control and keep the peace, if we want to just arbitrarily compare them to some of those that we, events that we have seen unfold in our country, unfortunately, where there has been a blatant abuse of power, if we want to do that, then we are playing into the scenario that it's us against them.
Right.
Without justification. And I think that, and we're trying to take a situation, again, that is very volatile, that's very dangerous, that's very out of control. And I say this with some reserve because I do worry about the fact that we have a situation existing in our country now where people are abusing their power on all levels of government and in all positions. But we have to also be reasonable about what we expect people to do and how they're acting. You know, I've seen people take the position that this officer is guilty of abusing his power because he shot this young man. And, but we don't have all the facts in that either. We can't take that position right now. It may turn out that, you know, based on some of the things that we've heard, that boy nearly beat that officer senseless, started to walk away when the police officer tried to arrest him and get him to stop so he could arrest him. And I'm just playing this out based on some of the testimony of various witnesses and things that have come out in the past 2 weeks, not saying this is what it happened, but if it turns out that this is the case and that police officer tried to get him to stop and he turned and taunted him and said, you know, what, you're going to shoot me now? And then starts charging him, the man could, if what we've heard is true about his physical condition after the beatdown in the car, the man mm-hmm. could hardly see out of at least one side of his face. He did exactly what he was trained to do and what he should have done and what I would have done, you would have done, any of mm-hmm. us who believe in the right to self-defense would have done. At that point, I'd have shot him, and I wouldn't have stopped shooting until he dropped.
Absolutely.
And if that's what the police officer did and that's how it went down, then it was a justified use of force, period. So we need to be very careful what we're throwing around right now to try to promote causes that we're concerned about or agendas or whatever it may be. We do not want to be part of the problem like Governor Nixon has chosen to be or President Obama or Eric Holder or so many others that have injected themselves into this before we even have the facts and are making accusations and demanding certain things be done that they have no justification to demand because we don't know the truth yet.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
you know,
yeah,
I don't know what the answer is, but it's not what we're doing.
Yeah, and this is, and I think what you said earlier is absolutely the nail on the head comment. This is not the time to be having the debate about whether or not we need to have militarized police. I mean, I'm not one for militarized police force, but this is not
no.
the time, and
no.
we shouldn't be making our decision about that issue on this case because this is just not the time. We also need to get the rest of the house in order
mm-hmm.
before we make that decision too. You know, you just can't put a Band-Aid on one aspect of it and expect it to be cured.
No.
You know, we've got problems all across government and militarized police force is not a one issue situation. There's a lot of stuff going on regarding that. So
we have become so divided as a country, Lisa. It's really tragic. It's frightening, and it's why we're losing our country. And I was listening to Martin Baker earlier. It occurred to me, you know, about why he went down there and everything. And you know, we've got all of these people who are upset about racial tension and racial inequality or whatever down there in Ferguson and everything. And then we have people who then turn and become just as racist because they condemn a Martin Baker for being there because he wants to see, you know,
He wants to just see due process.
The rule of law to prevail and our Constitution to truly work the way it is. And all of us need to be able to stand together regardless of color or anything else. And we need to stop letting people divide us and separate us and cause this kind, because this is being done deliberately, and it's just mind-boggling to me when I look at it and I see how divided we all are, and we can't seem to find a common ground to come together. Okay, here's the common ground. A young man whom it may be found out was completely innocent and died unnecessarily, in which case that officer should be punished. We need to stand together as a community of black and white, just side by side, and we need to see that justice is served. It may turn out that young man made some really bad decisions in the last moment of his life that cost him his life, and that is a tragedy for him. It's a tragedy for his parents, who are going to be burying him on Monday. It's a tragedy for the police officer whose life is going to be ruined. No matter how this turns out, that officer's life is done as he was living it 2 weeks ago before this happened. His family is going to be profoundly affected. He's got parents that are hurting for him, you know, and we need to care about justice being served, and we can unite around this, or we can continue to add to the division and the hatred and the anger, and we can become just as bad as the rest of them. I don't want to be that person.
Let's shift gears just a little bit before we wrap things up tonight. There are other things going on around the world that are very relevant to today's culture and our government. Let's start here nationally. A couple of days ago, Rick Perry was indicted on charges of abuse of authority. Okay, again, abuse of authority by a Democrat. I think it's the Democrat Attorney General there. Because he refused to fund a department when he asked someone to step down, and so they indicted him, and he went in and had his mugshot taken. And you know, I think foolish move on their part in Texas, because I think what they've done is they've made Rick Perry a martyr now. I mean, the whole situation is so utterly ridiculous that I think in the end, it's going to help Rick Perry when he decides to run for president. I think he's going to. And my second statement on this is I didn't think Rick Perry was really that big of a threat to the Democratic Party if and when he decides to run for president, or the Republicans, if and when he decides to run for president in 2016. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's a threat in that regard.
So why are they going after him?
I think it has to do with the position that he's taken on the this is just Cindy's opinion.
Speculation.
I believe that part of it is because it's a Democrats looking for an opportunity to take down a Republican. Typical political maneuver. I also think that there could be some weight being thrown behind this from others further up the food chain who see this as an opportunity to slap down and sidetrack Rick Perry while his state is facing an incredibly serious crisis on the border.
Like,
and he, as the governor, has taken dramatic steps as compared to what others are doing around the country to try and address this and take charge of what's happening to his state and on his state's borders with Mexico. And that's what I think could be behind it.
Yeah. Like George, there was a report today that George Soros has thrown a lot of money behind this initiative to kind of
and that would
put
not
a crimp
surprise
in.
Me at all.
Right. And I
fully expect that that could be what's behind it, because it is ridiculous.
And baseless.
The whole thing is ridiculous.
Yeah,
it is.
It's baseless.
It'll never really go anywhere, but it's a big distraction.
Exactly, and which segues me into this other issue. It's been all over the news the last couple of days about the journalist who was beheaded in the Middle East. So my theory is, because this is such a huge issue, you know, this journalist was beheaded in the Middle East because they're trying to get Obama to pull out of the Middle East and stop bombing and, you know, let the craziness over there happen without interference from the United States. My theory is that Obama is jumping all over this thing here in Ferguson as a distraction to keep folks from focusing on these escalating situations over in Syria and the Middle East.
Well, I agree with you. I think that it serves as a, you know, what's happening in Ferguson has become a real problem, but it didn't have to be what it's become. And I think that I agree, you know, while we're all distracted by Ferguson, and I'll have to admit that I fell into that trap myself, you know, you kind of dropped the ball on some of the other issues that are taking place on a worldwide basis and what that's going to mean to us.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's,
you know, we've lost track of, you know, I was following very closely and posting a lot and really staying on top of what's happening to the Christians and to the Yazidis, or forget what, you know, and to, you know, what is happening at the hands of ISIS over in the Middle East, and how incompetent this president has been in dealing with this situation from day one. And so I think that, you know, yeah, but it's not good.
Yeah.
And we've dropped the ball. We haven't been paying attention. We're being distracted from even bigger threats than what we're facing in Ferguson.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking of that today. Okay, so we live in Missouri. I live in St. Louis. We're all very focused on what's going on in Ferguson and have been for the better part of 2 weeks. It's a big deal. It's a national story, and it's one of the worst racial situations that most of us have seen in our lifetime. Okay. So, and then Rick Perry is indicted. We've got beheadings in the Middle East. We've still got Benghazi. We've got Ebola. We've got, I mean, just any slew. I mean, in 2009, when the Tea Party erupted, we thought things were horrible then. So in 2014, you can't even list all of the huge atrocities. We've got inflation. You know, we've got the economy. Nobody's talking about the economy right now. You know, I mean, just all of these astronomical issues that are just going, I talk about shock and awe. I mean, we are all being beaten down, and it's killing us. It's absolutely killing us. I don't know if we're going to make it through the next 2 years.
I don't either. And therein lies the problem, because we are, you know, and I think it is serving to be, this has become an international distraction, for heaven's sakes, Lisa.
Yeah. You know,
the international media is all over this.
It's a big deal, but it should not be an international story. Right.
No, it shouldn't.
This is not an international story at all.
It is not.
But it's a social issue that the Democrats like to climb onto and just bleed it dry. When, you know, something like what's going on in the Middle East right now, where there are beheadings of American journalists. You know, one journalist was killed yesterday, and another is about to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, and it is. I mean, in all fairness, I mean, it is part of the big story. But this stuff in Ferguson should not even be on the radar compared to the things that are going on over there right now.
It shouldn't. But if you look at Facebook, what are you primarily seeing right now? If you look at social media, what is trending the most right now?
Right.
You know,
it's all about
unfortunately,
Ferguson.
It's all about Ferguson, and yes, what's happened in Ferguson is a tragedy, but it should be a local story. It should be a story that only people here in the state of Missouri are really concerned about, and it's being turned into, has been turned into an absolute three-ring circus. So it begs the question, while the right hand is over here directing the circus, what's the left hand doing?
Right. And the number one hashtag right now on Twitter is Ferguson. The second one is James Foley. Third is ISIS. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, mm-hmm. It is. It's everything's kind of out of balance. It's just
it is out of balance when you
It kind of brings us back around to what we opened the show with tonight. It's about driving the message. The media and the politicians are very adept at driving the message, folks, and you've just got to be more adept at being able to see that stuff coming. You've got to be able to decipher what's reality and what you're being fed and conditioned to follow. And I mean, you just got to be smarter than they are, because they've become very good at driving the message and driving the narrative, and they're in control of the narrative now, and it's just time for people to stop allowing that to happen. It's time for people to start to take back control of the narrative, so that you tell the politicians and you tell the media what you want them to focus on. You just got to take control, folks. You got to be vigilantes in driving the narrative. And the best way to do that is to vote, with your pocketbook based on media and advertisement coverage. You can take control of all of this, folks, if you become active and engaged. You can drive the narrative on the militarization of the police force if you become active and engaged, and you become a powerful force and let the politicians know who's really running the show, instead of digesting and being spoon-fed what they're willing to give you. I think that's the most important issue. And I think on that note, we're going to wrap it up for tonight, folks. I want to thank Cindy McGee for sitting in with me again tonight. We plan to be back next week. I want to thank Martin Baker and Bill Hennessy. Good luck to Bill tomorrow night on his boycott. And we will be back next week with more information, probably about Ferguson, because I really don't think this issue is going to go away anytime soon. And we've got some other things going on in Missouri. We're going to have a legislative veto session coming up here in just a couple of weeks. Hopefully we'll have some information on that for you folks. And pray for the families, folks. Pray for the Brown family. You know, I'm not sure that they're actually going down the direction that needs to be going down in this situation, but they are a bereaved family, and they've suffered a great loss. And pray for Darren Wilson and his family, too. I mean, it's like you said earlier, Cindy, those two people are going to be tied together throughout history. And both of the lives of all of those folks involved have just have changed in the course of a second. So I want to thank you all for being with us. Follow me on Facebook and Twitter, Culture Vigilante, Missouri Grassroots Coalition.org, on Facebook, Twitter as well, and visit our website. Join Missouri Grassroots Coalition.org. You can be part of that movement, folks. It takes back the narrative, but you got to be active and engaged. And until next week, this is Lisa Payne Nager here with Cindy McGee, Culture Vigilante, Missouri Grassroots Radio. Thanks for being with us. We will be here again next week, Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Have a good evening.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.
But it will, Crickets. 90 minutes is a long time.
Okay. Are you there? Bye, Cindy. Thank you.